From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made yesterday when former journalist Rachel Barnhart became the second confirmed candidate in the Rochester mayoral race. She joins former police chief and county legislator James Shepard. Incumbent Mayor Lovely Warren has not yet announced whether she will run for re-election. This hour, it's our chance to sit down with Rachel Barnhart to examine her plans and her vision for her native city. She enters the race with a number of detailed ideas, from taxes to poverty to education. And we already have a pile of listener questions on these issues and others. We'll get to those. We have plenty to discuss. Rachel Barnhart, candidate for mayor of the city of Rochester, welcome back to the program.
It's nice to see you.
Well, before we jump in with Rachel, Randy Gorman, the news director, has a brief interlude to say.
That interlude would be, please pledge now, pledge your support. It's more important than ever. And I was just thinking about this show, Evan, of course, and many others that you've done over the last year in terms of the electoral process and candidates. And of course, we've invited all the candidates for mayor and other offices to come on your show. It's so important to have a public forum like this. But again, to continue the support for this and other programming here on WXXI, we need your support. We do these pledge weeks pretty seldom, I think, compared to other stations during the year. But you can make your pledge right now at 454-6300, 454-6300. Toll-free number is 1-800-295-9994. That's 1-800-295-9994. Or, of course, WXXINews.org. You can securely and safely make your pledge there. But please continue to support this kind of programming because we want to continue doing it. It's going to be a very busy year, and we want to do some very special things, especially with connections. It's going to cost some money, so we need that help.
Thank you, Randy Gorman, news director for WXXI News, and we're going to get started right now with Rachel Barnhart, who is, as I said, a longtime resident of the city of Rochester, so I assume you wouldn't be running for mayor if you were satisfied with the current mayor. Why aren't you satisfied with the performance of Lovely Warren?
You know, I'm not running because of Lovely Warren, and I'm not running because of Jim Shepard. I'm running because of what I've observed over the last 20 years in our city, and that is managed decline, status quo, high unemployment, high poverty. People with choices often don't want to be here. I'm running because I have a specific plan to address these issues.
You think, though, when it comes to people leaving the city or, as you say, a managed decline, that there is an effort to turn that chip around and that it could take some time, could take years, but it might be happening?
People have been trying to turn that ship around for many, many, many years. And incremental investments and programs here and there are simply not going to do the trick. We have to think much bigger. Rochester has a basic problem. It's a problem of dollars and cents. What people with choices aren't coming here, and we need to make it competitive. And the only way we can make it competitive is to make it make economic sense.
Can we start there with the proposal from your campaign that I think has gotten the most attention
Sure.
so far, especially in the last 24 hours? And that's a proposal to cut property taxes for everyone by 50%. Now, if you go to Rachel's website, Rachel Barnhart, it's
rachelformayor.com,
you can see a lot more depth of analysis or depth of explanation for these proposals. If you've got questions, you can call the program this hour. We'll sort through them. But on this, I want to start with this tax cut question. It wouldn't take effect for 3 years, but 50% is an enormous tax cut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so let's work through how it would work.
Sure. There are several reasons why we need to do this. First, we are a city of poor homeowners. Half of our homeowners earn less than $50,000 a year. 27% of our homeowners pay 30% or more of their income in housing costs, which qualifies as burdened. 60% of renters fall into that category, and we know landlords pass on property taxes to their tenants. So we know that our homeowners need relief, particularly our low and middle income homeowners. We know property taxes are a problem because every single new development in town gets a property tax. My proposal would fix
a property tax break.
Yeah. My proposal would fix a distortion in this system that rewards people at the top end and everyone at the bottom end continues to pay the same high rates. Property taxes actually can be a regressive tax, and that is how it works in the city of Rochester.
Why is it regressive?
Because people at the lower end are paying a greater portion of their incomes for property taxes. And we have the data to support that in this city because many of our homeowners are simply burdened. You know, I knocked on a lot of doors last summer, and some of them just, I'll never forget, and I can still see their faces. I would ask them, what can I do for you? What would you like to see from your government? And they said, help me with my house. They needed major repairs. They were in upside-down mortgages through no fault of their own. They may have owned their home for 20 years, and the neighborhood declined. They can't get home equity loans, and they don't have extra income to make the necessary repairs. And we know that has a cascading effect. So number one, my proposal would provide relief to current people. Number two, though, and importantly, it would attract investment into our community. This would be a property tax cut for everyone, for both homeowners and for businesses. And that would be very attractive. Yes, there will be people saying, look, you could never pay me to come back into the city. That's okay. I don't need you. I just need people over here. I don't need everybody. I just need a few to come back to make a really strong difference in our community. When you cut property taxes too, home values do go up and create wealth. That's a good thing.
Well, the average home, according to your website here, average home in the city is $72,600 mm-hmm. with a property tax bill of $1,394. So the average homeowner under your plan would save $697 a year there. But this wouldn't take effect for 3 years because you got to come up with a way to make sure you can pay for it. You can afford it, right?
Absolutely. And I forgot to mention there is another reason we have to do this. If we cut our property taxes, we'll actually be in line with Buffalo's rates. Buffalo homeowners pay far less. Buffalo collects the same amount in property taxes as Rochester does, and yet it has 50,000 more residents. The difference is because of state aid. This disparity hits us right in our wallet. Rochesterians get less in state aid, $200 less per person than Buffalo does, and we are forced to, by state law, pay our city schools $49 million more. There is a direct relationship to what we pay in property taxes, and we need to draw a line in the sand and say enough. Okay, so you want to know how we're going to pay for this.
I think this is part of how you want to pay for it, but Rachel, no mayor in my time mm-hmm. in Rochester, going back 15 years, has succeeded in convincing Albany that this disparity has to change. Nobody.
Right. Well, you know, Bill Johnson made a big deal over this. He certainly made a big deal over the maintenance of effort with the school district. And I'm not in any way proposing cutting that. We need our schools to have their funding. I'm not proposing cutting school funding. Bob Duffy raised some noise about this. But, you know, Tom Richards and Lovely Warren were pretty muted about this issue. But I've also never, ever seen a mayor say that you're paying more in taxes because of this disparity, and I'm saying it, and you really can draw that line on the budget. You can look at Buffalo's budget, you can look at our budget, you can do the math, and it's almost the same amount, and it hits us in our wallets, and I think that is a really compelling argument. The other thing that I think will work this time in getting the state's attention is what I'm saying is, look, this property tax break won't go into effect for 3 years. During that time, we're going to plan. Because the key to making this work is long-range fiscal planning, putting money away into a dedicated fund. Part of it is, we'll tighten our belts. We'll do that. And we may consolidate the water system with Monroe County, which could be $200 million. We'd have to study that. That's an enormous amount of money. And we will get new investment, new homeowners and new businesses, which would also make up that lost revenue. I think Governor Cuomo would like all of those things. These are the very things that he's talking about. Consolidation, property tax cuts, and budget cuts. We can do all of that. And we can do it without any service cuts. But again, the key is careful planning and spending priorities.
All right. So when you mentioned consolidating water services mm-hmm. with the county, I certainly don't want to imply that you haven't studied that. But some may say that's a lot of money. And if it doesn't come through, mm-hmm. then what are you going to do about this promise of a 50% tax cut?
This is a roadmap to get to where we need to go. I have offered suggestions on how we can get there. Some people might not like all of my suggestions. To them, I say, what are yours? Get on board. Let's all figure this out together to see how we can get there. But I believe very strongly this is where we have to go. This is where we have to go if we want to help our city grow, if we want to reduce poverty, if we want to get people back to work, and we want to make Rochester a city of opportunity again. And on the water system, we know that Monroe County did want to buy it 15 years ago, but they never really did an independent study to find out what it's worth. And Mayor Johnson at the time said, look, I don't think city taxpayers are protected. We would never do something like that without doing due diligence, without doing a major study, which the state would pay for under its consolidation grants, to find out how we can make this work to protect city taxpayers and city workers and to protect that asset. But the bottom line is Monroe County and the city already share a lot of water. And I think this would be a very attractive proposition to them.
All right. So I know in the last 24 hours, you've heard from some people who say, for example, I live in Victor. I would consider moving to Rochester if this plan comes through. You've also heard from people who say, this sounds like a big campaign promise, a 50% tax cut that would probably be impossible to fulfill. For those who are skeptical, who think the best you can do is 10%, 20%, is there any chance that 3 years into your term, you're looking at this going, we shot too high, that's not going to happen?
Well, I can't do anything by myself as mayor. You have to bring other people along. I am telling you this is the goal. This is where we have to go. And there are ways to get it done. I think one of the things that you would have to do to make this work is the day you pass this property tax cut, you have to make it really hard to take back, or else nobody wants to come in because they're going to think you can just pull the rug out from under them. It could be a charter amendment or something like that where you cap the rate. There are things we can do, and sure, it would be a leap, but you know, what's the worst that can happen? I just don't see a big downside here at all. I really don't. We plan for this. We find the money. We have a deadline, and we make it happen. And you know what? If we end up cutting property taxes by 25%, that's still very significant.
Well, Maddie on Twitter is an example of someone who sees a possible problem. He writes, I own a home in the city, and property taxes are not a major issue to me. Aren't we just creating a problem down the road of budget shortfalls and loss of services? How do you avoid this without one-time gimmicks? The issue is that people my age, when they have kids, move to the suburbs because of the city school reputation.
Yeah, this isn't a one-time gimmick because, as I said, we'll be planning for the short-term revenue loss. But with increased investment in our city, the revenue will go up. San Francisco and Boston in the 1970s were pretty terrible cities. They were in dire, dire straits. Nobody wanted to be there. They had a taxpayer revolt and were forced to cut their taxes, and everybody said it would be doomsday. Guess what happened? Everybody came back. Without regard to crime in schools, everybody came back. And they flourished, and they had a surplus within 4 or 5 years.
So San Francisco and Boston are kind of a model for what you want to do with this.
I wouldn't say it's a model. There are things that are a little different. For example, they had a higher tax rate than their neighboring towns at the time, which made them toxic. We, on the other hand, have about the same tax rate as our surrounding towns, some more, some less. But I believe that if we go that low, we can get people to come back. But this has been shown to work. The other thing that happens when you reduce taxes is more people pay their taxes. People who are delinquent end up being able to pay. That happened in Detroit. Their tax levy fell not because they wanted it to, but because, you know, it's Detroit. And they ended up not having any tax receipts, no fall in tax receipts, because people just said, oh, I can pay now.
All right, so before we move on to some other issues that are part of Rachel Barnhart's platform as she runs for mayor of the city of Rochester, one more question on this subject. Mm-hmm. You write on your website, that this initiative would mean the end of corporate giveaways to the rich.
That's really important.
In the form of property tax abatements. And so what I want to hit is the point that you're trying to make here, that this is aimed at citizens who may be struggling. This is aimed at homeowners who want to stay in Rochester. But just about every mayor, just about everyone in economic development at most levels of government, state, county, city, will tell you, just as you noted earlier, that when companies think about cities like Rochester, they say, what do you have in it for me? What is the tax break? What can you offer me? And some might think what you're saying here would drive them away.
Absolutely not, because our tax rate is going to be very attractive to them. You know, we can do away with pilots. We don't need pilots. We'll have certainty in their tax rate. We'll be securing their property rights. We'll be securing what they're going to pay for years to come. I've talked to people about this. I've talked to developers. I've talked to economists. They love this idea because it gives people certainty about their taxes. And it is wrong that we keep paying people to come here in the form of property tax breaks, and you and I have to still pay high taxes on our homes that don't have as much value. This is not trickle-down economics. I would argue it is the exact opposite. Also, part of my platform is we'll end the pay-to-play system. No more campaign contributions from people doing business with the city, and that includes developers. This what I am proposing makes a system that's fair to everyone, provides opportunity to everyone, and will attract people to this city.
Are you saying that there are unseemly relationships between city government and developers right now?
Look at who donates to campaigns. the people who put in bids for projects, the people who have projects going, the people who want projects. Those are the people pay to access. They pay for access. We know this.
First question from a listener is John in Rochester. I'm with Rachel Barnhart. Go ahead, John.
Good afternoon. I'm a student attending the University of Rochester. My question is, it's very unusual for someone to announce their candidacy for a major public office without inviting the public. Is there a reason for why the public wasn't invited to your kickoff, nor were they encouraged to attend?
Yes. The public was invited to my kickoff. They were able to watch it online, and we were able to book a small room. I did a slideshow with numerous slides, and we did not want a pep rally. We wanted to set a tone. We wanted to set a very, very serious tone about issues. And if people asked me where it was, I invited them to come on down. But this, we wanted to set a tone that our campaign is based on issues. It's not, we're not going to have a frivolous campaign pep rally. We'll do that at a later date. But yesterday was about issues, and it's not unusual. It's not unusual for a kid. I've covered many announcements where the public doesn't show up.
What we're going to try to do throughout this campaign season here on Connections is focus on the issues, focus on how the candidates would govern, what they would pursue. I know you saw the statement from the Friends of Lovely Warren committee yesterday. It was a short one, responding to your entry into this race. We don't know if Lovely Warren is going to run for re-election, but the statement from the Friends of Lovely Warren committee was the following, quote, last year, Ms. Barnhart ran for state assembly. This year, she has announced her candidacy for mayor. We are curious to learn what office she will run for next year, end quote. Is that unfair or is that fair?
I think this statement speaks for itself. It's petty, it's childish, and I think it goes to why I'm running here. You know, I ran for state assembly last year. This campaign is the same fight. We are fighting to reduce poverty. We are fighting to reduce inequality. We are fighting to increase opportunity. We're fighting for better economic development policies, fighting for better transit, fighting for more child care. The fight is the same, and I'm not giving up. And I have heard nothing from any of the two other candidates, or Lovely could be a potential candidate, of substance at all. And the fact that, you know, you issue a statement that has nothing to do with issues speaks volumes.
When it comes to the kind of chatter that's out there, I've said on social media myself that I've been disappointed with some of the commentary we've seen about race already. Mm-hmm. It's hard to get away from race. What I want to ask you is not a question based on some of what I perceive to be the really personal, nasty stuff. But I want to ask you a very direct question because this is a community that is, as we know, still more segregated than many cities of its size, struggling at times with issues of race. As mayor of Rochester, how would you view making sure everyone is included in decision-making, in opportunity, in progress, in neighborhood growth? Do you think you could do it?
Absolutely. I value diversity, and I value representation, and I value building relationships and coalitions. Certainly my administration will reflect the community. Certainly I will build relationships with the faith community, with neighborhood groups, with anyone who wants to dialogue with City Hall. And in fact, that is part of our platform, that we will have an open City Hall for people to come in. We will solve your problems. We will have a tenant ombudsman. You know, if we're going to offer a property tax break, we want renters to be able to come in and get their problems solved. We'll have a jobs office. We have 14% unemployment rate in the city. People who want jobs will be able to come in and get some resources. City Hall will face outward. We want it to be a place that's inclusive and open to everyone.
You think it's shrouded right now?
I think that a lot of people struggle to get, and look, when I was a reporter for a long time, and I got calls every day from people who were struggling with this issue or that and couldn't get answers or had to deal with red tape. And I believe that I have the skills to make City Hall turn outward and solve people's problems, because that's what they look to government to do.
You know, you just mentioned having a jobs office. Well, perhaps supporters of Mayor Warren would say, well, Rochester Works is
sure.
already there.
And we can work with Rochester Works. But the bottom line is we have a 14% unemployment rate in the city. It's higher for African Americans and Latinos. This is completely unacceptable. We need to figure out where that disconnect is. And we want to have a place. It doesn't have to be a major place with 20 people on staff. But I want to have a place where people can come and get resources. Something's not working. And I'm very happy to work with Rochester Works or any other employment expert on what we can do to fix this and what City Hall can do to fix it. I want City Hall to be able to facilitate this.
All right, listeners, if you want to join the conversation, it's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Sam in Rochester, next with Rachel Barnhart. Go ahead, Sam.
When the mayor ran for office, she said that there was two cities, white city, black. Now there's got to be three. Because 99% of the mayor's work, effort, money, and all of that has gone to the north of Rochester in Charlotte. There has been nothing accomplished in the intercity, in the urban part of the intercity. And she ran on that she was going to improve the quality of home, improve the quality of life. She was going to get in and dig out drugs and all of that. None of that has been done. And as far as jobs, Bob Duffy, who is the chairman of the Rochester Business Association, because I'm a minister, has supplied more jobs in the black neighborhood than Mayor Warren has. Now, Mayor Warren changed her looks. She tried to change her looks, but that didn't do nothing to change her mind. Now, she bought new glasses and she got a new hairstyle, but it has done nothing to help anybody in the urban community.
All right, Sam, I'm going to cut you off there. I don't want to talk about appearance. I mean, I don't think that's fair. And Sam's a regular caller, and everything I can tell, a great guy. And I appreciate the phone call, Sam, but let's not do that. Let's not talk about glasses or hairstyles if we could. Let's talk about the substance. And what Sam is saying, Rachel, is that he doesn't see a delivery on jobs for everyone. He sees a concentration of focus in parts of the city, but not for everybody. Is that fair?
I think we're not doing a good job reducing poverty in our community. I proposed that the city finally step up and provide funding for childcare. It would be about less than 2% of the budget to fund spots for 1,000 more children. And in fact, it's probably far more children could be assisted because the state does matching funds. So it's really a travesty that this hasn't happened before. It is not a huge lift for the city to be able to provide some funds for Monroe County. Instead, all we hear are politicians blaming this person and that person for why isn't there any child care funding. Well, I think it's time for the city to step up and pay for this and find the money.
Okay. Do you have an expenditure, an idea on an annual basis, how much we're talking about?
$6.5 million. Okay. But as I said, the state does provide some matching funds, so we believe we can impact far more than 1,000 children. And I think that's the kind of thinking that we need. We have to stop living in our silos. We have to perhaps collaborate with the county on some of these things. I think the county would be thrilled to administer this program for us.
All right. Phones are starting to light up as we continue our conversation with Rachel Barnhart, who is running for mayor of the city of Rochester. A couple more questions from the host, and I'll let our listeners do a lot of the asking in the second half hour here. But I want to talk a little bit about your views on policing. You want a few changes. You have a few changes in mind for RPD. Specifically, what?
Well, number one, we need to have a fully staffed police department. I've always criticized mayors for when they have recruit classes and saying, oh, look, we're spending more money on police. And I would say, well, your budget has an authorized strength in there and you've never met it. So we need to make sure that we're always at our authorized strength. And that means staying ahead of retirement, staying ahead of disabilities. And we need to make sure these officers are actually in the community. That is true community policing. There are an awful lot of officers down at headquarters and at offices. That has to stop. We need to get as many officers as possible on the road. I also think we need to reform the civilian review board process. We right now rely on investigations conducted by the Internal Affairs Department. That does taint the process. I believe police chiefs should issue written decisions about why they're choosing to uphold or not uphold complaints. And I think complaints need to be resolved within 120 days. Our citizens are asking for these reforms, and I think they're very reasonable.
You have also said that part of the challenge in open-air drug markets, for example, is drug law to begin with. That right now, we've got drug markets in various parts of the city. We've heard from residents, from neighbors who've worked so hard on those issues, that often it's people who don't live in those sections of the city who come in sell, leave, or come in, buy, and leave. And they're working on these issues. And I know RPD is working on it. The mayor says she's working on it.
Mm-hmm.
Part of what you want to do, though, is advocate for legalization as part of the strategy?
Well, I've long been an advocate for legalizing marijuana.
Yeah,
and I would definitely use my bully pulpit as a mayor to encourage state lawmakers and encourage Governor Cuomo to get on board. The war on drugs is simply not working. As for heroin, it needs to be treated as a public health crisis that it is. That issue has personally affected my life with a loved one, and it's a very scary thing. We need to be focused on saving lives. And, you know, as far as open-air drug markets go, we know who the criminals are in a community. And in the past, we've been very successful at rounding up young gang members, for example, and reading them the Riot Act or even arresting them. I think we can do the same with our drug dealers. And I know that the police department works very hard on this issue. And I know it's complicated because you clear a corner, they go in the middle of the block. They go inside. It's a very dynamic and complicated issue. I will support any efforts to clear those corners. It's hard. It is hard stuff because the war on drugs is a hard one to fight.
All right, the last question before our only break of the hour and then listener questions the rest of the way home. You mentioned on your website, on this issue of policing, you want to make sure that we're not over-targeting what you call minor offenses. That was an interesting phrase for me.
We need to be focused on problem-solving policing, and I do think the vast majority of officers approach their job that way. They don't want to arrest people. They don't arrest people more than they arrest people. But I do think that it makes a statement to the public to say, look, write a ticket as a last resort. You know, write that disorderly conduct as a last resort. Write the jaywalking as a last resort. That's not what we really want to be focused on. We want to be focused on having conversations to make sure the behavior doesn't happen again. And a lot of that already happens with police officers.
Okay, but when you set that tone from City Hall, the reason you're doing it is what? What's the main reason you would set that tone?
I want to set a tone that we want trust between citizens and officers, and we want our officers focused on crime. We don't want an antagonistic relationship at all. We want to make our residents safe. We don't want to make them dislike police officers or feel they'll be targeted for minor things. And remember something, a ticket can have a spiraling effect on someone that they can't pay. And that's a huge problem for a lot of people.
All right, let's get our only break of the hour. We'll come back with your phone calls and questions for Rachel Barnhart, who is the second declared candidate in the race for Rochester mayor this year. Coming up in our second hour, we examine the question of whether any action can truly be selfless. It's a discussion about why people do good things or things they think are good things. What is morality really based on? Can you measure it? Is altruism even possible? Or are all of our actions based on some kind of motivated self-interest? Talk to us next hour about it, and we'll share your thoughts. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Brief hello from our news director, Randy Gorbman.
And hello. Hello, hi. Evan. Hello, Rachel.
Hello.
Again, another important discussion here on Connections, and we bring you a lot of coverage. We did last year, of course, during the big presidential year. We've got a lot of local elections, not the least of which, of course, is the mayoral race here in Rochester. We'll be doing some extensive coverage on that, special reports, also trying to gauge impact in the community. And to do everything that we do here, we do come to you a couple of times during the year asking for your support, which we are doing this week. If you could consider making any kind of a pledge, that would be very helpful. You can do that by calling us at 454-6300 or toll-free at 1-800-295-9994. Again, that's 454-6300, 1-800-295-9994. Or you can do that online at your convenience at wxxinews.org. Remember, your money goes not only to help us fund shows like Connections, but all of the news programming you hear, of course, the great programming you hear from National Public Radio, from NPR, is something that we don't get for free, but we also do support that with a lot of local programming. The series that Evan and Megan Mack worked on over the last year, The Teacher Diversity, it took a lot of time, a lot of hours, and also cost money to do those kinds of things. So if we are expected to do, which we should be, more in-depth and more investigative journalism, please consider making your support today. Thanks.
I'm just going to say, if our listeners, whoever's listening, if you don't care about journalism in 2017, don't call.
There you go. That's pretty simple, isn't it?
If you do,
454-6300.
Thank you, Randy.
Thanks.
We continue with Rachel Barnhart, who's running for mayor of the city of Rochester. And back to the phones we go. Rich in Rochester is next. Go ahead, Rich.
Hello, good morning. Good afternoon.
Yes, sir.
Rachel, touching on two things that you sort of touched on. Number one, you mentioned giving more assistance to renters as far as maybe, you know, their rights or whatever. And also, there's a lot of gentrification going on in Rochester, and one of the problems with gentrification, of course, is, you know, pricing people out of the market. What moves do you want to make that's going to support the lower middle class and middle class residents of the city as far as housing, as far as maybe doing something to spur housing ownership within that market?
Right.
Just
no,
as much
really,
as going on with the higher-end market.
Yeah. Thank you very much for asking that question. One thing the property tax cut will do is allow more renters to be able to afford mortgages and get into homes. And gentrification, I'm glad you brought that up because it is a natural question if you're talking about growing the city. You know, when I think of gentrification, I don't think of rising property values, rising incomes, and more neighborhood services. I do think, however, of people being displaced, renters being displaced, and homeowners being displaced. That's bad gentrification. And there are things that we can do to prevent that from happening. First of all, we need to make sure that we have economic diversity in our neighborhoods. And that means building low and middle income housing in our higher end neighborhoods. You can't just concentrate low income housing in certain neighborhoods. That's just not going to work. Also, if a neighborhood is gentrifying, there are programs where you can give tax credits or other kinds of credits to homeowners to help them stay in their homes. There are very specific steps that we can do to make sure that longtime residents who are the social fabric of a community don't have to leave.
All right, back to the phones, and we go to Mike in Rochester next. Go ahead, Mike.
Yes, hello, sorry. I had a question in regards to, you spoke of the civilian review boards earlier, and I would like to know what your thought on actually having more of a, what am I trying to say here? Like more of a, so it's supposed to be a accountability for the police. Is there a way to have more power to the civilians? Because as of right now, it's, as far as I understand, it is just a recommendation, and the police chief is able to do whatever he wants to.
Yeah, that's correct. And this has been a longstanding issue. The Rochester Civilian Review Board has been held up as a model, but in practice, it's really not independent. It relies very much on what the Internal Affairs Department says. And the police chief has the final recommendation. And the other thing is none of this becomes public because by state law, police officer discipline records have to remain under seal. And that can be very troubling to people involved. I do think there has to be a way that we can inject more accountability into the civilian review board system, and I'm open to those ideas. But keep in mind, there are state laws that we would have to follow on that issue. But the police chief does have the final say. I believe that they should have to write up a report on why they're making a certain decision. I mean, for example, the Benny War case, the man in the wheelchair who was on video being beaten by police officers or arrested by police officers, that's going through federal court right now. And you can read a lot of documents in that lawsuit. And then Chief Jim Shepard exonerated those officers. I think he or found it unprovable. Didn't discipline them, essentially, only disciplined one for making
it. And by the way, on this program, James Shepard, who's running for mayor, said that he defended that decision, that the process, essentially, he trusted that it worked. But the video that Rachel is talking about shows a man in a wheelchair with, I believe, one leg knocked to the ground by officers.
It was an arrest where there was a use of force, and it was for disorderly conduct. The charge was adjudicated in contemplation of dismissal, and it is winding its way through the courts right now. And in on the page where it says, you know, the chief found it unprovable, he did write a disciplinary letter for someone who, you know, said a bad word. I think an officer said a bad word to Benny War. That's all. But he should have to write up why. You know, there should be an explanation of why he came to that decision. But in his deposition on this case, he was asked, you know, is it normal to knock over a suspect? And the chief said, well, it depends on who is winning. and there's a pattern of referring to officers, use of force as winning and losing, and it's very disturbing. But I digress. So the issue with the Civilian Review Board is there's just not a lot of information that they have to go on in many cases. I do believe they have the power, though, to call people before them, but in practice, they really do end up on relying on the packet that they're given from Internal Affairs.
Do you think that people of color are treated differently by police in this city?
I would like to think that's not the case. And I know that there are officers who work very hard every day to keep people safe. I do support the Black Lives Matter movement because it acknowledges that there has been a disparity in justice in our justice system, and we know that's true. And I've certainly covered incidents in Rochester that raise a lot of questions. And I would certainly hope, as mayor, that I would set a tone that that any of that discrimination, which sometimes can be unconscious, but it just can't be tolerated. And we have to listen to people when they say that they are being discriminated against. We have to listen to them.
Former Chief Shepherd on this program had some very strong words for the current mayor, Lovely Warren, about the fact that she did not show up during the demonstrations last July that we saw. He said she should have been there as the mayor to help in different ways, to be a part of it. And the police chief, Chief Simonelli, had said, look, he told us, he said, I asked the mayor not to be down there. I couldn't guarantee her safety. I wanted to make sure.
There was a missed opportunity much earlier in the day, in my opinion, because there were, I think the city had something really early in the afternoon while people were working, had a moment of silence because of what happened in Dallas. And she had a moment of silence, but, you know, the public really wasn't involved in that. I think there was a missed opportunity to have a moment of unity where people on all sides of this issue were looking for a place to come together and grieve. And I think as mayor, I would have liked to provide that opportunity. I will say about the arrests that night, I thought while it may have been appropriate to clear the street of the protesters, I'm not sure they needed to be written tickets.
Okay. Back to the phones. And Robert in Fairport, next up with Rachel Barnhart. Go ahead, Robert.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm not quite sure if I understand how a 50% cut in property taxes is going to work in a city where maybe 30% or a third of the property is already tax-free. I mean, University of Rochester and RIT and these various churches and nonprofits, including the one you're sitting in right now and conducting this interview, don't pay any property taxes. So I'm not quite sure how that is going to be accomplished. The other thing is that I believe the city of Rochester borrowed money to pay retirement contributions for its own employees. So I'm not really sure that the city's being run very fiscally responsibly right now, and I'm curious to see how Ms. Barnhart thinks about that, how she would handle that.
Sure. I'm basing these numbers on what our current assessed valuation is and our current tax levy. So we're not really talking about properties that aren't being taxed. I believe that fiscal responsibility is going to be very important. Spending priorities are going to be very important. I'm not talking about slashing and burning this budget or cutting services. What I'm talking about is making our spending priorities such that they serve residents. We've spent money on projects that haven't delivered. We're giving tax breaks to developers and not homeowners. I'm saying we have to restructure our system.
Would you agree with the idea that if you cannot get the state to increase the aid that you say Rochester deserves vis-a-vis other upstate cities, and if a water consolidation doesn't happen, then you're going to have a very hard time paying for what you want to do?
I think there are a number of things that we can talk about, and I'm open to any other ideas. But as I said, I provided a roadmap, and I'm open to other people's ideas for how we can get there. Every politician says that they have goals, and when they get into office, it's on them to get there. We can go down a number of ifs on my plan, but this is the plan, and people can weigh in on it, and it may change. I want to hear what the community wants, but I believe very, very strongly that this is where we have to go to spur investment in our city, provide relief for homeowners, and to attract businesses. I believe very strongly that what we are doing now is not working, and that you have a very clear choice in this election. You can vote for change and a new way of thinking about city government, or we will be sitting here in 4 years and we will have the same high poverty rates, the same high unemployment rates, and nothing really will change.
We've had a number of listeners ask about not only the property tax plan, but your ability to get it done. And mm-hmm. I think that speaks to experience. And I know you've already, in 24 hours being in this campaign officially, had some say, you know, what are the qualifications that someone should have? Mm-hmm. And so you get used to that question. What do you tell people when they say, look, you've been a journalist. Now you're working with settlement houses in
Rochester. And the chief development officer Houses Foundation of Rochester. That's correct.
Right. And so when they say, does that prepare you to be the mayor of Rochester?
Here's how I would answer the experience question. I'm going to argue that my opponents have the wrong experience and I have exactly the right experience. For the last 18 years, I have read every single city budget. I have read every single city council legislation, every single request for proposals, every single big draft environmental impact statement on big projects. I've delved into the financials and the feasibility of the Interloop, Midtown Plaza, the Port of Rochester, the failed Renaissance Square project, Blue Cross Arena. I've looked at all of this very closely. I've spent a lot of time with every single mayor, police chief, school superintendent. I've talked to thousands and thousands of citizens about their hopes, their dreams, and problems that they have in their lives. I know what works and I know what doesn't work. I have the skills and the knowledge and the leadership ability to be mayor. Part of this job will be surrounding myself with the best possible people without regard to political patronage or relatives to execute a vision, because that is what a mayor is supposed to do. We've had managers. We've had managers for 20 years. We've had experienced managers. And guess what? We're in the same spot. Nothing has changed. We need a bold vision, and we need new leadership. And that's what I provide.
All right, John in Fairport, next on the phone with Rachel Barnhart. Go ahead, John.
Thank you, Evan. Rachel, I vote Libertarian, so I'm delighted to hear from a Democrat who wants to reduce taxes. I wrote an op-ed in last week's Rochester Business Journal called It's Time for Rochester to Lead from the Bottom Up. And so I'm just wondering, and I talked a little bit about how this city does have a sense of community and people with disparate interests who are in positions of influence do work together very well to make progress. We're in a culture now where loudness substitutes for leadership and abrasiveness for authority sometimes. And I wonder how you can come in and restructure government in order to achieve your goals without putting people in a situation where they're on the defensive, and how you ultimately gain the support of city council as well as other people in powerful positions who have influence on our direction.
Sure.
Thanks, John.
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. I'm going to have to work with an awful lot of people. I'm going to have to build those relationships. And guess what? I already have a lot of those relationships. Through 18 years of reporting in this city, I know an awful lot of people, and many of them respect me, even if they sometimes don't like my politics. They know who I am. And I would hope to build on those relationships, but no mayor can get anything done on her own. That is very clear. And one of the things that's very important to me is to involve the public, especially when it comes to big requests for proposal projects. We've seen with the Interloop, we've seen with Midtown Plaza. I don't like how these committees are just choosing the plan and there hasn't been a lot of input. I really think the public needs a role there.
You know, you wrote a book about your experience in the last campaign.
Yes.
And you were disappointed in so many ways with the Democratic Party, with what you perceived as unfair attacks on you outside of the substance of the campaign. Mm-hmm. That was a tough book, and it was a very stern assessment of local politics. Can you come off that book now and still have relationships within the Democratic Party structure and still work with them?
Here's the thing. I wrote that book because I learned a lot, and I think other people learned a lot too. In fact, I'm going to a book club tonight with a group of doctors at Highland Hospital who read my book and invited me because they wanted to talk about it. It's resonating with people who recognize that we need a change. When people ask, I know you asked Jim Shepherd this on the show about unifying the party, and he said he could unify the party. And that's ridiculous. He's running on the turnout for Tom ticket, essentially. We can't continue to have factionalism and petty party politics if we want to improve our city. And the only way we can end that for good is to stop choosing candidates who are from either faction.
Is it Gant Morelli? Are those the
yes.
two factions?
Yes, it is.
That's what you're talking about.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, I'm the savior and I'm going to unify the party. But what I can do is say, I'm not part of this nonsense. And the only thing I care about is fixing our city and strengthening this party. And as long as we keep fighting each other and releasing statements like the mayor made yesterday, we will not succeed. And this is why we get lackluster candidates. This is why we don't win many elections, because the party operates too often like an exclusive club. And in fact, someone just tweeted me, why aren't you involved in the party? I said, oh, I'm trying to be involved. I've asked to be on a committee. So far, they're not letting me. You know, I'm trying to make that statement. I have been a Democrat since I was 18 years old. I share your values. I am a progressive Democrat. And we need to stop thinking about who's paid their dues and who's been, you know, who stuffed envelopes and who worked for this person and who worked for that person. The fact is, I'm here now and I want to contribute and I have something to contribute.
All right, a couple more quick questions from the host and then the listeners. Real quick here on policy issues, you said on schools, you would not be in favor of mayoral control.
This is a really important question because, you know, I went to a segregated school. I'm a graduate of John Marshall High School. I believe in a countywide school district, and I think that's the moral position to take on this issue. However, I don't think we'll see that in my lifetime. There's no legal mechanism, and there's no political will. The best thing that we can do to fix our schools is to fix the city. Number one, we have to lift people out of poverty. We know that high poverty schools have lower achievement. This is why I'm proposing a property tax cut to get more businesses in Rochester to provide jobs. I'm proposing childcare. I'm proposing fiber internet for every single household so children can have...
I was going to ask you about that as well.
Okay, so children
can you pay
for
fiber internet?
Yes, I'll tell you how.
Okay.
So children can have opportunity. And number two, we have to attract and retain middle-class families because economic diversity is the key to improving our school district. No one wants to go first. You know, we meet all kinds of families who say, we got to move to the suburbs. I can't send my kid to that school. I don't want to do it. But what if we can all go together? You know, what if we can get everybody in a room once we get a critical mass of families and say, look, I know you might not want to send your kid alone, but what if we all go together? And as mayor, I will be a true champion for the city school district. I will be the biggest cheerleader, and I will have those conversations, and I will pull families into that room and say, can we just try this together? Let's all hold hands and go, because it will help our city, and it will help everybody. It will help children from all walks of life to have diverse schools.
Fiber internet would be huge, but can it be paid for?
Fiber internet is a capital cost, and it can be shared with the Rochester City School District as well as a private vendor. I look at fiber internet like infrastructure. To me, it's like a road.
As in you have to have it.
I do. And it's not only for our children who need access to opportunity because about half of our city school children don't have internet at home. It's also to send a message that Rochester is open for business and we are a high-tech city. Businesses want affordable fiber. This could be a real game changer for us.
This is unfair, but can you do it in 25 seconds? Charter schools, would it be different under a Barnhart mayorship?
The only concern I have, I'm not a charter school fan, but they're here and I believe we need to collaborate with them, particularly on facilities. I don't like that they're building duplicate school facilities, taking properties off the tax rolls. I think this is a really unsustainable plan.
All right, he's been waiting all hour. Keith, go ahead, Keith, keep it tight.
Real quick, Rachel, I didn't support you when you were running against Harry, but I do support you fully for the mayor. One of the big things is that you're not a public servant right now who's retired and will be able to double dip. I wanted to ask Shepard that question, but I was never able to get on the air to ask him. I think the people who have public pensions retire after 20, 30 years and then go back to work again, I think they shouldn't be allowed to take their original.
Well, let me tell you something. I agree with you. I think when you're retired, you should be retired. But the question about Jim Shepard is not just his pension. It's who else he's bringing on staff who need pensions, such as Molly Clifford. I mean, the other two campaigns here are all about jobs and pensions. I'm here because I want to serve my community, and I'm not here because I want to dole out jobs to people.
Your website one more time if people want to check out more on your plans.
RachelForMayor.com. I really want your feedback. I want to hear from you. I know I'm put a lot on you on the website, but I believe very strongly in being transparent and letting you know exactly what a Barnhart administration will look like.
There are two candidates officially in the race for mayor, James Shepherd and Rachel Barnhart. You have heard them both for an hour on this program. If the mayor runs for re-election, she'll have the same opportunity. If others get into the race, they'll have the same opportunity. I hope multiple times. And I hope we see some debate.
I'll be in.
It's early on.
Anytime.
But you'd be there. I know James Shepherd has said that as well. Thank you for being here. We appreciate your
time. Thank you, Evan.
All right, short break. More Connections next.